All right. Hi, it's Anna Rosa here from Top Flight Drones. I just want to welcome everybody. And today we're going to alter our flight plans and talk about a passion can become a successful business. Today we're going to chat with my friend Joe Slack, who is a board game aficionado. Joe runs the popular site crazylikeabox.com, where he is featuring his latest game, Cunning Linguistics. How you doing, Joe? And welcome to the podcast.
Doing well. Thanks, Anne.
Hey, great. I'm glad you could join us today. Okay, before we get into the whole website and game product that you've developed, I just want to ask you a few background questions. First of all, you know, what makes you tick and why games? I mean, tell me a little bit about how you've gotten to that point.
Well, the game thing has only really come up in the last few years. I've always really liked having different creative hobbies on the side. Mm-hmm. I've played music, played in bands, things like that when I was a bit younger, then got into sketch comedy writing. And probably about a few years ago, when I was really getting back into playing board games, we had a good group of friends, and quite often when we get together, we'd play some board games, break some out, and have some fun in the evenings. And there was one particular game that some people continued to bring out over and over, and it was fun at first, and then it kind of got a little bit dull or a little bit repetitive after a while. And I thought, well, couldn't I make something that was a little bit like similar to that, but a little bit more fun with a lot more replayability, so you'd want to keep coming back and keep coming back to it. So I just tinkered around a little bit and kind of came up with my own version of a game and tried it with some friends. And the first version wasn't great, but it gave me some ideas for how to kind of build on that. And so I just kept tinkering and just changing little parts of it, and actually brought in a friend who's a board game aficionado himself, and just, you know, kept tweaking it and making it a little bit better, trying it with friends, trying it with other people that I didn't really know so much, and going to some game designers' nights and some board game cafes and that type of thing. So it went from just something I was just doing for fun to deciding that, you know, this game was actually pretty good. Maybe, you know, some people out there would be interested in actually buying it. So thinking about what I wanted to do, if I wanted to do like crowdfunding or what I wanted to do next. So that's kind of how it started.
So which game was it that got you hooked?
The game that I was kind of getting bored of?
Yeah.
First, it was actually Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, really? Because that is such a hit now. I mean,
it is a big hit, and a lot of people buy it, and a lot of people keep buying the expansion packs, but I find that unless you keep buying those expansion packs, it doesn't stay fresh. Even though there's hundreds of cards, you do continue to see the same things over and over again, so I wanted to make something more replayable.
Well, maybe that was in their business model, though.
It could very well be. Expansions definitely make a lot more money when you keep building on something.
Right. Okay. And, you know, when you think about, you know, obviously you have a comedic mindset. So you talked about, you know, you like to do comedy sketches and things. You know, do you find that is like the driving force behind your game development?
I wouldn't say behind them all. I definitely do like putting in some humor and some creativity in it. And that's why I kind of evolved from like a Cards Against Humanity type of game to something where you could create your own answers, use your own sense of humor and your own personality.
Right.
So everyone kind of gets to add to that. So it's not a generic kind of stock answer. Everybody gets to add and put their own kind of flavor on it. So I kind of like that. I'm working on a bunch of other games, and some of them do involve humor and some of them don't. So just depends what kind of comes out in the game.
Okay, so when you talk about game development, first of all, you talked a little bit about, you know, meeting these people in game clubs or game get-togethers. I mean, how prevalent are those? I never really hear about them myself. I mean, are there a lot of them around?
It's getting bigger. I mean, it depends where you are, but in some of the bigger cities and towns, they do have these, any place where they have like board game cafes or friendly local gaming stores, that they call them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have little areas where people can get together and just try the games out before they buy them. And a lot of them are introducing these game designers nights because they're realizing that a lot more people are kind of coming out of the woodwork and making games on their own. And they need some kind of forum to test these games with other designers and play testers and get that feedback, because it really is an iterative process.
Yes.
So it really depends where you are. But I mean, with the age of the internet too, there's also ways to create print and play type versions of games and put them on board gaming websites and that type of thing. So if you're in an area where you can't get out to these designer nights or they just don't offer them, you can always put them up there and ask people to play test for you, and you can do the same thing for them. And it's a really giving community where people are really willing to give feedback, and it's not competitive really. It's all about really pushing for people to play more board games and that type of thing as opposed to other activities.
So when you talk, so let's talk a little more about the actual development process of games. Is there an overall process that most people follow, or is it specific to the actual game that you're thinking about developing?
Well, I think there are some general things that most people do. Uh-huh. When it comes to first coming up with the idea, everybody has a different way of doing it. Some people start with a theme. Some people start with a mechanic or a mechanism in the game or a combination of those. Sometimes it's just an idea. Sometimes a name just pops your head or you're playing another game and you think, oh, wouldn't it be cool if they did this different, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's just taking that idea, putting it down on paper, putting it down on something you can play around with. And then from there, a lot of people do have kind of a similar system where they kind of get it out, get a little bit of an idea of it, and then they maybe, you know, just play around with it themselves just to see if it kind of works on its own, or maybe with their spouse or another friend or something like that, just a kind of small kind of group. Maybe start out and then go to a bigger group of friends, trial it with different people. Mm-hmm. And then once you get to that stage where you feel it's in pretty good shape, maybe you have some rules set out, it's, you know, it feels good, and people kind of play it and are enjoying it, then you could take it for blind play testing, which is where you just hand it over to a group with the rules and just say, just go and play it. I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to sit back and kind of see how it goes. And then you can kind of oversee it and see where people are running into problems, where they maybe misinterpret a rule, where they have questions, that type of thing. So you get a lot of feedback that way without being there helping them.
Right.
So I think most people do that whole play testing kind of step. If you don't do that, then you're really missing a crucial step, because you really need feedback from other people. You can't just have it in your head and just put it down and say, okay, this is done.
So when you look for people to do your initial testing, is it kind of like the same group of people all the time, or is it a different, you know, do you have a core group that you always work with, or is it, you know, you're always looking for new, fresh faces?
When I first start out, I usually just start out either by myself or with my wife, just kind of trialing it out, just kind of, you know, working out the initial kinks.
Right.
And then I have a group of friends that like board games and
tabletop
games, so I tend to get together with them and trial it with them first. And then I start to take it out to some designer nights to get feedback from other people once it's, you know, a little bit more established and I've played it a little bit and worked out some of the early bugs.
Right.
I don't have a really specific group, although that is something I'm actually trying to put together right now with other designers that kind of do similar types of games to me in the same genre, and some playtesters that I've met. So I'm trying to get together a group that's going to meet regularly, maybe once or twice a month, just to play a whole bunch of games, like just take a day and just play a whole bunch of games, get feedback, and then come back a couple weeks later with some tweaks or with some new games and just keep building on them from there.
Yeah, so when you look at, I mean, I've done a little bit of nosing around the web about game development. I noticed that, you know, if you Google that, there are a ton of, you know, all different pages on development. And, you know, people talk about strategy versus mechanics versus creativity. I mean, which one is more important to you?
I think it depends on the game. When I get an idea for a game, there are certain things that I have a feel like I have a bit of a vision towards where I want to go. It might be a very creative, kind of comical, humorous game where the creativity is above and beyond. That is the one thing I want. I want people to create their answers. I want them to come up with something fun and fresh and just laugh and have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
There are other ones where you need to kind of figure out the rolling of the dice or the how you're going to be picking and passing off cards and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe sometimes it is the mechanic that comes first. It's maybe an idea of I'm going to try doing something in a way that kind of another game hasn't done before, or tweak something that I've seen in another game. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a theme. Quite often for me, it's just a theme or an idea that pops into my head.
Okay.
And then I kind of work around that and carve something. And sometimes it goes a different direction than you originally entail. But what they say is you want to keep to your core vision, get feedback from others. You have to take that feedback with a little grain of salt, because sometimes it throws it completely different direction than you really want to take it.
Right.
Sometimes that's good. Sometimes it takes in a direction you really want.
So do you have a specific affinity, or do you have an affinity for like a board game with tokens versus a card game versus, you know, a strategy game like Risk? I mean, is there something that you prefer, one genre, so to speak, that you prefer to work on?
In terms of when I game and when I play myself, I like a wide variety of games, everything from dice games to card games, party games, and some that are more like cooperative type of games, like a Pandemic or Flashpoint Fire Rescue or Forbidden Island, that kind of thing, where you're working cooperatively and the goal is for everybody to accomplish something. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a variety for the games I play. For the games that I'm designing right now, I'm kind of focusing more on light, easy to play games that anybody could kind of pick up. It might be a little bit of a cliche, but easy to pick up and hard to put down.
Okay.
So one that, you know, you can play in, you know, 15 to 30 minutes or maybe a little longer, but, you know, not one that's going to take a really long session, but you can sit down and play it. And then once you're done, if you really enjoyed it, you can pick it up and play it again or move on to the next game, that kind of thing. So okay. Ones that have quite often a little element of humor or just fun, just that are like fast paced, keep things going and don't kind of get bogged down, just are like really easy to learn.
Okay. How does board game development, I know this might seem a little out there, but how does board game development compare to like video game development?
Oh, it's there are some things that are definitely similar.
Okay.
The similarities are definitely in the testing. Okay. Absolutely. It's the same way with board games, okay. Where, you know, you design a level in a video game maybe, and then you get people to test it and see if they can kind of break it.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, things go out of whack or it has glitches, that kind of thing. It's the same thing with a board game. You just try out something and you get feedback on it and then you keep tweaking and making it better. Board games are a lot faster to develop, though.
Really?
Because there's so much programming that goes on in video games.
Right.
I don't know the ins and outs because I'm not a video game programmer, but from what I've heard, there's a lot of things to consider, and there's like the graphics and the story and, you know, voices you're going to be putting in, that type of thing. There's a lot of components that go into it, and the development can take, years to develop a video game. And
plus, you need teams of people.
Oh yeah, you have a whole team of people, millions of dollars.
Right.
For a board game, it can be very different. It can be just a solo thing, one person just coming up with it and getting feedback and putting it out there, and, you know, within a shorter amount of time, you can have something that's a fairly finished product.
Mm-hmm.
Work on it with a co-author. And then you have so many options of what you want to do with it. You can put it on a Kickstarter or other crowdfunding site where, you know, you basically have the game in a short amount of time and then you're getting the funds and then you're putting it out there. You can pitch it to a publisher where they will take the game and they could change it completely. So it might be a completely different looking game from what you have. So it just depends on what you want to do. So there's a lot of differences, I would say, between the two, but, you know, there's some similarities as well.
Wondering if there would be some way to collaborate with them at some point, you know, I don't know, you know, a board game version of something or a video game version of something else, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And even board games, they make quite a few into apps.
Yeah.
You can just play on your phone, and some board games turn into video games and vice versa. So it just depends. If you have something that is really good and it works really well and it can be adapted to different platforms, there's absolutely different opportunities to do that.
Cool. Okay. All right, so let's talk about what you're working on, since we've all got a nice background with the life of the board game designer. So let's talk about Cunning Linguistics. How did that idea, you talked about the card Against Humanity, obviously that was the inspiration for Cunning Linguistics. So what happened and, you know, how did that come up?
I think we've gone through a fair bit of how the idea kind of came up and kind of tweaking and making it better all the time, going to these designer nights and getting feedback and getting some feedback that, you know, this is, you know, pretty polished game at this point. It seems like it's like pretty much done there. And then I've learned a ton through the process, through reading, through looking at blogs and listening to podcasts. And there's so much to learn and so much I wish I knew when I first started off, because I just took this idea and just kind of went with it.
Yeah.
My friend that was working on it with me, we were clear set on doing a Kickstarter path.
Okay.
This is going to be the best way to do it. You know, we remain with our creative control and be able to put it out there. And, you know, we thought this was better than, you know, some of the games out there we were seeing on Kickstarter. But we learned a whole lot in the process, found out that one of the main things is if you're going to be popular and you're going to sell a lot on Kickstarter and do really well, you have to have a following. So if you just go on there and nobody knows you, you know, there's that small chance that, you know, people might pick it up and you know, might, you know, go viral and might people might be really interested. But if you don't have a following, you don't have a whole bunch of games created already and people are, you know, looking for the next one, there's going to be very little interest and it's going to be very hard to get that. And even for those games that do meet their goals, it seems like they're just barely funding their goals.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it there's really not a whole lot of money to be made in it. So you really have to be in it for the fun. And that's what I'm in it for. I just want to get my game out there to
right.
a lot of people play it. But also learning about the Kickstarter experience and other crowdfunding, it's a lot of business that goes along with it as well. Like, you have to understand shipping and fulfillment and manufacturing and, you know, keeping your crowd engaged and keeping them updated on things. And it's a real challenge. And if you go that route, you really have to be setting aside the next 6 to 12 months just to get this game from funded out to people.
Right. So
it's a huge, huge commitment. And during that time, you can't really be spending a whole lot of time working on new games and that kind of thing. So I really asked myself the question, am I a game publisher or am I a game designer?
Right.
And my clear answer was, I'm a game designer. That's what I love to do.
Would you be able to work with a company or something to do a distribute it? Like, you know, when you write a book, okay, and you can work with publishing companies you self-publish a book. There are companies out there that will publish the book for you on demand, so to speak. So you don't have to worry about all that back end stuff. Are there companies that will do that in the game industry?
Yeah, there are actually some new sites that have come up, one being Game Factor, and a couple other kind of print and play type models where you upload the game basically and they will print off a one-off
right.
orders, that kind of thing. It's a little small, it's a little bit new. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how successful people are in getting their game out to a lot of people in that way. It definitely is a lot more costly than doing a big run of the game, so people have to be willing to put up a little bit more money to get that game and get it shipped to them. And then the other option is more the traditional way of just going to a publisher and, you know, seeing if they have any interest, you know, sending them like a sell sheet and sending them some details on the game. And if they're interested, you can sell and they ask for it, then you can send them a prototype and they'll go through testing and see if they're interested in actually taking it to market. Now, it is a viable option. It's something I've definitely looked at, but chances of getting published are very low as well, because you have hundreds, if not thousands, of submissions going to these game companies, and they may only put out a few, maybe 10 games a year. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, maybe a couple percent chance of getting in if you're mm-hmm. doing good. So it is a challenge. So I'm kind of looking at some other models as well, because through this whole process, I've learned that it's really hard on a game designer to get your game out there. I mean, you either have to put in a whole bunch of time and effort on a Kickstarter and hope to be successful, or you go through the publishing route and, you know, hope that maybe somebody will pick you up. Once you got published, I've heard it's a lot easier, but getting your first game published is a real challenge. So just getting your game out there, I've been looking into other models to try to help other game designers like myself to get their game out there for the mass market.
Yeah, it's almost like you need your own self-publishing company, get a bunch of people together and somehow work that out, but I don't know what it would be.
Yeah, I mean, that's something you could, you know, somebody could come up with for sure.
That would be really cool, yeah. Unless it was something, you know, if it's a card game, you'd offer to download some sort of a download scenario. That might work.
Exactly. Well, that's actually something I've been working on, more of a kind of a print and play kind of a model where the cards are right there. You just download a PDF and you print and cut up the cards and use it like that. So it would be games that don't rely on a lot of components and
right.
a lot of pieces, that type of thing. So that's actually the model that I'm trying to work towards.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a membership site where people could come and join, and every month they would get the game of the month, and it would be one that, instead of having to wait for shipping, wait 6 to 12 months for a Kickstarter or wait for a publisher, the game's already ready to go. So they just print it off. They have to put up a little bit of time up front to print and cut some cards, and then use some components that they might already have around the house for tokens or some dice and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And even kind of creating some kind of a topic generator so that somebody can go to the website and just push a button and get, you know, the next topic for a game. So they don't necessarily have to print off if they don't want to. They can do it all online, or at least part of it online. So there's less printing, a little bit of environment.
Right.
A little bit, that kind of thing. So that's the kind of model I'm kind of working towards and seeing if people are interested in.
That's interesting. That's a whole new game, a whole new use model for gaming. You know,
I'm thinking it's a way that designers can get their game out to people that could be potential fans a lot easier.
Right.
A lot less cost and a lot less work.
Right.
If they're in it just for the game and just getting people to their game rather than in it for the money, because really there's not a lot of money to be made in the game industry unless you're a publisher or unless you have one of these hugely successful Kickstarter campaigns,
mm-hmm. which,
you know, very low chance. It's really hard for people to get their game out. So if you're all about just getting people to see your game and maybe getting discovered and, you know, maybe getting that chance down the line, have a following. I mean, this is a great way to get a following. And then if later you want to pitch to a publisher or do the Kickstarter then, at least at that point, you have a bunch of people who are saying, yeah, this game's really cool. I would potentially buy it if you put it out with all the components.
Right. Plus, it would also conquer the other issue which you brought up at the beginning of our discussion, which had to do with, you know, kicking the boredom craze, boredom issue, right? So you have one version of a game and then people get tired of it. You could easily provide another version of it.
Exactly.
Which would, you know, keep people interested over a longer term, and you get repeat business that way. So it's a much more scalable, repeatable model versus something that's a one-off.
Exactly. And part of the membership community I want to have too would be generating a lot of feedback. So the people that play these games, they get back to the designer and maybe say, oh, you know, something wasn't quite clear in the rules. Or what if you added this thing to the game? I think this would be nice. Or maybe a timer or something along these lines. And then the designers could take that feedback and then say, you know what, this is a really good idea. I'm going to add this to the game. And instead of the person having to go out and buy, you know, version 2, which, you know, often happens, or buy an expansion for it to kind of correct some of the, you know, mistakes or some of the issues in the first version, they could say, well, you know, you've already downloaded this. Here's the next version. Since there's no manufacturing, no shipping involved or whatnot, there's no extra cost. So the designer can just hand that right over to the person, say, here, I've just cleared up something in the rules, or here's, you know, some extra components that will make this game even better, kind of thing. So there's no extra cost.
Right.
Which you often see in some games. You know, you have to come up with different versions or expansions to make the game better or extend the playability. So I'm trying to get away from that as well, so that it makes it a lot easier and people don't have to keep buying it. It's kind of like, you know, going from an 8-track to a record to a tape to a online, iTunes, or whatnot. Like, you have to keep buying the same version because something's changed. It's quite annoying for somebody to have to keep dishing up more money.
Right. Plus, also, if there's a glaring issue, a glaring problem, it's easy to correct.
Exactly, yeah, and you don't have to, you know, go through a whole different versions of games. You know, here's one little minor tweak. Here you go.
Right, I love it. Wish a lot of things in this life work that way. Okay, so, you know, you talked a lot about, you know, how your business has evolved. So what other games do you have? Like, I mean, I don't know if you can talk about this yet. I mean, do you have some other games that you're looking at?
Sure. I'd love to talk about stuff that I'm working on.
What else are you doing? What else is in the crazy box?
Well, I've got a whole bunch of, I'm actually, later today, I'm going to a prototyping and publishing event. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get to try out my games with some other playtesters and other designers, and hopefully have a chance to show them to a couple smaller publishers and see if there's any interesting stuff. So I'm taking a bunch of games today. So I'm not even taking Cunning Linguistics because I feel that's kind of already done and polished at that point. So I'm taking one other game I'm calling right now Isle of Rock and Roll.
Ooh.
I love rock and roll, kind of a theme, kind of going there, where it's a card drafting game where you create your own rock band and try to outdo everybody else that's trying to come up with the best rock band in the world.
It's like a fantasy rock and roll game.
Exactly, yes. The idea kind of came from looking at different rock bands and thinking, oh, that would be so cool if, you know, you take, you know, one guy from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and one guy from, you know, Pearl Jam, and, you know, kind of make like a super group. And, you know, sometimes they do make those super groups, but
yeah,
you make a game out of that. And I came up with what I think is a pretty cool idea of, you know, basically drafting your own musicians for a band and kind of upgrading them and replacing them and kind of coming up with the best, you know, the loudest, most energetic, most funky, most creative kind of band, and earning gigs as your band gets better and better.
Wow.
And then, you know, the winner at the end is like the ultimate, you know, band of the world kind of thing.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. And I'm working on some other more dice-based games. There's one I'm working on that I don't have a finished title for, but it's kind of an escape game where you've been trapped by a mad scientist and you wake up and you're in the cell. And it's a cooperative game where you can play it either solo or with a bunch of other friends. And what you have to do is roll the dice. It's basically a fast-paced dice rolling game where you have to roll certain combinations of dice to escape from your cell and then to get to the next rooms and to discover and find keys to the doors to keep moving along further along. And as you're going, there's a soundtrack that's going to go along with it. And every minute, the mad scientist and his henchmen are getting closer and closer to catching you. So you have 10 minutes basically to get from the cell to find the escape exit.
Excellent.
And if they catch you before that time, or, you know, you run into a dead end, they can't get out, or the final exit closes within that 10 minutes, you failed. But if you can get out with your whole group in that time, then you've made your escape.
Nice. I like these. I don't know where you get these ideas.
It just comes to me. I don't know. It's this muse of, you know, ideas just coming to me, and then, you know, taking that idea and remembering to write it down and trying something with it.
Right. Sounds like a lot of dreams that, you know, so I don't know. Maybe if I think of something, I'm going to start sending them to you.
For sure.
Okay. That's great. Okay, let's talk about, you know, say I'm walking into a game store. Okay. How do I choose the best game for me?
Oh my goodness. everybody is so different when it comes to games and genres. There's so many different types of games. There's people who like, you know, the light, easy games they can just break out with friends, ones you can play with family. There's ones people like more adult themes, or maybe heavier games that, you know, you sit down and play for a few hours. So I'd say if you're going to a game store where they really know their stuff, you know, your friendly local game store, where people are really versed in the games, as opposed to, say, like a Walmart or a Target or something like that, where they might not have enough an idea, and it's more mass market games, where it's, you know, that's a great place to go if you're looking for just, you know, fun, family-friendly game. But if you go to your local game store, if you have one, you can really ask the staff. They're fairly knowledgeable, usually, and so you could tell them what kind of other games you like, or they might ask you questions around, you know, you know, how long do you want to sit down and play with? How many other players? Is this going to be something you're going to play with? Most likely with, you know, just one other player. You're going to be playing with large groups. Do you want to play for hours on end or just play for 30 minutes? What other games do you like? And they'll generally give you an idea of what types of games might appeal to you. You can also do reviews online. There's lots of great review sites and playthrough sites. Board Game Geek is really good for looking at ratings and types of games, asking other friends, that type of thing. But yeah, if you just walk into a game store, you can really be overwhelmed because
there are
hundreds of games, everything from dice games to card games to board games to deduction games. So it's really good to just ask those questions, or have somebody ask those questions of you and get an idea of, you know, here's something you might want to try. But if you have like a board game cafe or a board game store that allows you to trial games, that's a really, really good opportunity as well. So without having, you know, to shell out 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks or more on a game you don't know if you're going to like, you can maybe just play, you know, pay $5 or $6. You can go play for a whole afternoon or an evening, just trial out a whole bunch of different games and seeing what's right for you, what's not. Quite often the staff will be able to help you get started and show you the rules and how to play and some ideas of what other games, if you like that, or if you like this, you might like this other one, and you just kind of start from there.
Okay. So it sounds too like you would almost want to create like a collection of games, you know, because obviously one game isn't going to fit, you know, you don't want to play the same game all the time. What do you recommend for people who want to create like a collection? I mean, you know, other than just Monopoly, Sorry, and Payday.
For sure. Well, I mean, games have evolved so much, and you're totally right. There is no, you know, perfect game that it's going to appeal to everybody in all sizes. And even, you know, a game that's great today, you might get bored of tomorrow. So if you want to build your collection, I'd say just, unless there's a particular type of game that you just really, really go for, I'd say having a variety of different types of games is good. And also knowing who you're going to be playing with generally. A lot of people don't get a chance to get out and play with a big group of friends. So maybe you're just playing with your spouse or partner, or maybe you're just taking it into work and just playing with a couple of other coworkers. You have a few friends. So if you're generally playing games only, you know, two player or three player, you want to find games that really work well for two players. You want to find games that suit your kind of personality. Do you like the kind of take that type of games where, you know, you're, handing something off to somebody that's going to be like a negative effect to them? Or do you want to do games that are more cooperative, or at least, you know, not so heavily competitive? So it depends if you're really competitive people, or you're cooperative type of people, or, you know, competitive to a lighter extent. Do you like party games? Are you going to have the opportunity to break these out? Because quite often the party games, you need, you know, 4, 6, 8 people to play. So you're going to have the opportunity to play those often. Also, what other games do your friends have? If you get together with them, you know, you might not want to get all the same games as them. So they have variety. So you can take games over them. They can take them to you. You can trade, borrow that for a couple of weeks and play it and see if you like it. Having a bit of a variety is always good.
Okay.
You don't get bored with one thing.
All right. So now we're going to play Pick Your Brain.
Sure.
All right. So say you're playing Monopoly. Okay. Now, what I want to know, because, you know, I ask this question to people who like to play games, is are you a stickler for the rules or not? Okay. So, you know, we get all these, you get together with your friends and you have this argument about free parking. Okay. That's always the big one. You know, do you collect the money in the middle of the board that everybody puts in after they pass go or whatever, when you land on free parking or not? I mean, that's important. We need to know. What are your thoughts on changing the rules?
Absolutely. So, no, you bring up a really good point. Quite often you'll play a game a certain way and then you might develop a house rule.
Yeah.
Here's something that somebody else has tried, or somebody brings over a kind of a variant of the game, and you might want to try that and see, maybe that makes it more fun.
Right.
I've heard about Monopoly in specific. Yeah. Sometimes the games last so long because people add these other rules.
Right.
Super long, and then people get tired. Oh, I don't want to play a 3-hour game Monopoly. Well, maybe that's because, you know, you've added something into it.
Right.
I think right off the bat, though, you want to, you know, set the ground rules so you don't want to get into that argument partway through the game how you do it.
Right.
So right off the bat, okay, free parking. Are we doing it, you know, free for all? Every dollar goes in there. If you win it, you get it. Or is it just, you know, a free pass kind of thing? So if you kind of decide those things ahead of time, how you playing a game, then it comes you from having arguments later.
Right.
So that's one way to definitely do it. But, you know, house rules can definitely make a game more fun. So if you're playing a game and, you know, there's something that, you know, just not quite right or just not quite balanced, or maybe, you know, there's a dominant strategy that somebody always takes so they always win, maybe you want to alleviate that in some way. Maybe, you know, only one person can do a certain thing, or there's only so many of a certain card or something like that. That might make it more fun. So you just have to kind of play around and trial it.
Okay. All right. So speaking of Monopoly, there's the latest controversy about the thimble. They want to get rid of the thimble. What are your thoughts about that? Because, you know, I grew up playing with all the original tokens. I'm not going to tell you how old I am. But, you know, what do you think about that? Because it seems to be, I know it's a marketing ploy, but a lot of people were upset when the iron went away. And now we're going to get rid of the thimble and replace it with a, you know, Twitter hashtag or something. So what do you think about that?
I don't know. Yeah, I just heard about that recently as well. And I don't know. It's something that's, you know, part of the original game. And if you have one of the original copies, then I guess it won't affect you too much. But if you're going on buying a new copy, I mean, there's also so many different versions of the game out there.
Right.
Like Monopoly and Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, whatever you want. So whatever version you get, you're going to get different components and that type of thing. But I guess it comes down to the question, does it really affect the game greatly? Is it going to change your gameplay because you weren't able to pick the thimble? Does it matter if you have just like a meeple or a pawn character? As long as you can all distinguish each other from each other, does it really affect the game? So
right.
I guess that's a question you have to ask yourself. For me, it wouldn't really change Monopoly whether or not, you know, I pick the race car anyways, usually.
Okay, all right. I'm a top guy girl, but...
But, yeah, if it doesn't really change the gameplay, I wouldn't really, you know, wouldn't really bother me too much.
Okay. All right, now here's my hypothetical question for the day. If you were stuck on a desert island with four other people, what would you do to keep everybody amused until help arrived?
I've thought about this question and posted
it on the forums. Okay.
Basically, what would be the one game or gaming component you have with you, right?
Right.
I would have to say a deck of cards, to be honest, because you can do so much with a deck of cards. You can play any game imaginable. There's, you know, hundreds of things to choose from, so you never get bored. Once you get bored with one game, move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of board games and tabletop games that I could play hundreds of times and probably still love. If I had to pick a board game in particular, one probably would be Pandemic, because it's a really cool cooperative game that you could play over and over, and it always changes every time. You can do it at different difficulty levels, that type of thing. But ultimately, a deck of cards would, you know, last you through however long you
there.
You know, Monopoly, after a few plays, you're just like, you wanted to throw it into the ocean, I think.
Yeah, I know. Well, plus, if you don't have cards with you, you can make them out of those big palm leaves on the, you know.
Mark the deck. Oh, that's the one the coconut fell on, and there's a marking.
All right. So, you know, I'm just curious, do you have any pieces of advice for anybody who wants to get involved in this business? I mean, what would you like to tell our listeners about, you know, getting involved in the game industry? What do you think?
Okay. If you've got an idea for a game, the first thing I can say is put it down on paper. Don't let it just get stuck in your head as an idea. You really have to get it down, take it from an idea to an actual thing. Because it may play out really well in your head. You might have an idea. You might have it all figured out. But until you actually get it down, take a pen and paper, markers, whatever your instruments are, get it down, just trial it out, even, you know, by yourself with one other person, just see if it actually works. Because it might make sense in your head, but until you actually get it down, it's just an idea at that point, and you really have to take it from that into an action and doing something with it. And then play test. So try it yourself. Try it with a group of friends. Get it to the point where it kind of makes sense. People are having fun with it. You're going to go through a lot of iterations, and don't be tied down to just one idea. You want to have your vision of what the overall goal of the game is, what you want it to be. So you don't want people to sway you completely. If your game is about, you know, like my game about forming a rock band, and somebody comes along, maybe you should, you know, be building the best garden or something like that. Well, if that's not what your initial aim is, and it's not, maybe that's a different game entirely and something you want to work on, but don't let your total overall vision be swayed, but how it's played out. Maybe, you know, you want to add a dice component, maybe cards, maybe in a different way. Maybe people draft cards, maybe people pass cards. Maybe you start with 7 cards versus 4 cards. There's so many different ways you can try it. It's basically like a split testing, play testing kind of scenario. You're trying different things, but get it out there, play it with a bunch of different people. Start with your family and friends. That's fine, but realize that they're not necessarily the most unbiased group. they may say that, oh, this is fantastic, this is really great, and they may be willing to buy it. But until you take it out there to, you know, if you have some other designer friends, play it with them. If you have other people that play games regularly or play test, they're a great group. People you don't know, especially once you've got it at that stage where you think it's pretty good and you have rules set out, take it to a group and just let them play it with the rules without you interacting or answering any questions. And then you'll know at that point how it really plays and is it really good, how much more tweaking you have to do. It's a lot of testing and tweaking and making changes. But yeah, just get your idea down. Play test with a bunch of people, just take it from there. And then the whole business aspect of it, it's really up to you. There are so many options now that weren't available before. You can pitch to publishers, you can self-publish, you can do it through Kickstarter, which is basically becoming your own publisher, other crowdfunding. If you just want to get out there for people to play, just put it up on your website or on BoardGameGeek as a print and play version. Just say, print it, play it, let me know what you think. You know, you might get discovered in one of these ways by a publisher. You just never know. Put it out there. Put up a video of you playing it, and with you and your friends or other people having some fun with it. Just get it out there and get people to know about it. It just depends. But if you're in it for the money, I'd say probably find a different business. Because unless you think you're going to run Kickstarter after Kickstarter or get published by one of the major manufacturers and sell a million copies, you know, chances are you're probably not. So you really have to be in it for the love of the game. And if you are, then it's just about getting your game out to a lot of people that can play it and you know, just moving on to the next thing. And don't get set in just working on one game, because you might get stuck on it, you might get frustrated, and you know, might not come back to it or might need a little break. So if you have a bunch of games in the works, that's always good. And that's always going to generate more ideas to get your game even better. Maybe something, you know, comes out in the game, you say, oh, that, you know, that would work in, you know, the first game I was working on.
Kind right.
of and just having a lot of ideas, and also play other people's games, whether they're games off the shelf that have already been manufactured or other designers' games. It'll give you so many ideas. Just play a variety of different games, and it'll broaden your horizons and make you think of different things that you didn't think of before. So those would be my few pieces of advice, more than that.
You could write a whole blog on that.
Yeah, maybe a whole book. Well, people have, so.
I'm sure they have, but that's really helpful. Okay. Wow, that's been very helpful. I don't know if there's anything you'd like to add. I think you've talked about just about everything that I had. Do you have anything else you'd like to bring up at this point?
Not a whole lot, just other than play board games. Everybody
play board there. Games. And we're going to stay tuned and keep checking crazylikeabox.com. So I want to thank you very much for spending time with me today. And as I said, you know, it's really inspiring for me, and I'm hoping for our listeners to hear how people have, you know, turned your passion into, you know, a bit, even into a viable business. I mean, that's the, you know, and I think you're also working on growing that community, which of other gamers together. So I think you're going to help other gamers as well as get some great games to us, you know, to the general public, which should be a ton of fun. So I just hope you'll just keep doing what you're doing, because I think it's a great start. And so for more information on Joe and his games, not just cutting linguistics, but also his other ventures, don't forget to visit crazylikeabox.com. And this is Anne from Top Blade Drones. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us today. And remember, fly safe. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Anne. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks.